premier, premier de ses sacrés talons, à Olympe comme Christine. Pour nous, ça fait que vous, ça fait. Alléluia.
Good morning, everybody. Our meeting today is with the Office of the Auditor General. The purpose for us to meet with the Office of the Auditor General is for the Office of the Auditor General to take us through the audit report of the audit report of the Department of Transport, and if there are any also, and also the transport agencies for us to get a clearer picture of the opinion of the Auditor General. That process will then be followed by an engagement with all our entities, which is going to take place on Thursday and Friday. We welcome you, and we would like to take this opportunity to thank you for availing yourselves to address us. We think that what you will be sharing with us will assist us to engage with the transport agencies, and also to further engage with the Department of Transport. And then in our deliberations, in terms of the report, we would have a clearer picture. The information that you will be sharing with us would also assist us to look at the budget review in line with the medium-term expenditure framework. And also it would assist us to look at the expenditure patterns of the department and the transport agencies, so that we are then in a position of influencing the budget in terms of, first, the allocation of the budget to the Department of Transport, but also in terms of redirecting the budget to the most areas of need, because the committees now are empowered to do that. So we think that it is very, very important that we sit here with the Office of the Auditor General. Thank you very much. And we would then give you an opportunity to address us. I don't know who is leading the delegation. Is it Vinay or Graham? Graham. Okay. Thank you very much, Graham. You can take the stage.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. We intend to share our duties this morning. So I'd like to try and familiarize yourselves just with some of the overall comments and where we are and what we're doing. And then we'd suggest that the mayor take you through the lengthy handout in a little bit more detail. And then we will certainly endeavor to attend to any questions that you may have for us. With regard to the purpose, I think the purpose, excuse me, is, as you mentioned, it's to share with you the audit outcomes on the transport portfolio. I think in order to do that, we have a slide presentation which you will have. We also have detailed notes which substantially slides and set out every entity which is mentioned in every slide, so one can go and delve into the detail. And then we have four annexes. And I'd like perhaps to direct you, if I may, first of all to the annexes. I think they're perhaps the best summary we have of what we're going to do this morning. And if we look to Annexure 1, I regret that the title is incorrect. It should read Audit Outcomes, Transport Portfolio, and not National Departments. But other than that, I certainly hope it's stable. And you see there the departments and agencies that we're going to talk to you about this morning. And we see also there, at a high level, the results of the audit. So we see there that there were no audit reports disclaimed. We see there that there was one adverse audit opinion issued for a transport management corporation. One qualified audit opinion on cross-border road transport agency. And then we report on a number of other things. So the next column shows us those which were financially unqualified on the financial audit, but in fact did have some findings either on predetermined objectives, that's the PDO, and or compliance. So we see that the majority falling into that category. And then lastly, we see those audits which were financially unqualified and where we had no other comments, and one hesitates to use the word completely clean audit report, but I think that's perhaps the best summary of what we had on those last two audits, namely SANRAL and the RAF. Clearly, an audit report doesn't mean that everything is going perfectly with the institution at all. It simply means that we're lending credibility to their report. So they may have reported all sorts of misty manners themselves, and we're simply saying in the audit report that that we lend credibility to their reporting. The Auditor General has embarked on a very constructive overall strategy, and that is to be far more active and to engage much more closely with the department and its entities with regard to constructively contributing to improving the audit outcomes. And in order to do that, he's identified three key drivers to simplify that process, and those three key drivers we find in Annexure 2, and we'll find that Annexure 2A refers to leadership, Annexure 2B refers to financial and performance management, and Annexure 2C refers to governance. Am I going too quickly or? We would need A and B. I think we would. A is leadership. They're all one page annexes. B is financial and performance management. And C is governance. Perhaps there's is there a secretary that could? I'm sorry, the mail that we sent with them, at the bottom it had three tabs, so it's very easy to miss the other tabs.
Page down.
Can I find out as to why you are not having the presentation?
Honourable Chair, we're certainly able to do that. We just weren't quite sure as to what the expectations were. computers now to put them up there. That's something that we could certainly do in future. It's at our offices across the road in Parliament Towers.
That would help a lot because even we can't see. All of us are old.
For that, Honourable Chair, we'll certainly do that next time. We didn't receive that clear directive that there was that expectation, but that, as you say, that is normal practice, and we were certainly able to do that.
May I make a suggestion that while we're waiting for them to set up, that we just plan what entities are presenting which day on Thursday and Friday. I'd just like to be ready and have read the right documents for the right days, if I may, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you. I thought maybe we were waiting for the IT people. I'm not sure. Why. No, the IT people don't meant to wait for us. Even when we are making them, they are the ones.
You don't know how. Well, we were told that our computer is not compatible with the system here, so
but
our computer and their computer.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Samsa, And then numbers 7 to 11, the Railway Safety Regulator, the CBRTA, the RTMC, the Ports Regulator, and the Driving License Card Account. So there were material corrections made to the financial statements, and it's important for us to note that, because as we go through to the governance slides, I'm going to just pick up on that and communicate that to you as to where that pulls through. I think with that we can move on to the slides on the key controls. We normally deal with these slides in the order you find them, 2A, B, and C. And these are the key controls areas that the Auditor General has identified. And we believe that what the mayor is doing here next to me is he's just making it a bit smaller, so please don't be concerned about not being able to read it, but I think the big picture is important as we start off, and if one sees the big picture on the screen in front of you, all the greens vis-a-vis the reds in total, as you see it there, I think it does paint some sort of a picture of the portfolio. As the need arises, or if it arises, he'll just magnify that again, so that we can look at the specific parts of it. The Auditor General believes that if these three key controls are in place, that entities will then, in fact, they will result in clean audits, and we're driving this far more actively. Certainly than we did before, so we interact, of course, with yourselves, but also with the minister. The three controls are on these three slides, and they are the first slide is leadership, the second slide being financial and performance management, and the third one being governance. So those are the three key areas. And then you'll find under each of those three key areas, we find two or three aspects, if you will, to pack them out a bit further. And then you'll find that on the left-hand side of the slide, we have those aspects where they're in a positive light, and on the right-hand side of the slide, we see those same aspects where we believe they need attention. If we look then at this first slide, leadership, we're referring to the leadership in the entities themselves, to the accounting officers, to the chief financial officers, to those charged with leadership and making a difference there. And what we said about the corrections to the financial statements, we find pulling through here to these three slides. So it has influence to a degree quite a number of the red blocks that we see there, which are headed up financial statements, as it is in our perception, which controls were lacking in providing us with accurate and stable financial statements up front. So sometimes we believe that's been due to review, sometimes due to systems, sometimes due to leadership or perhaps governance, and we've marked those blocks accordingly. Also, you'll notice there, under the headings of predetermined objectives, that refers to our audit of the department's reporting or the entity's reporting on their own performance. The entities, of course, have to do strategic plans up front, and they have to then report in terms of those plans at year end. We look at year end at the standard of that reporting. We look at the systems in place to provide sound reporting, and we're in the process of phasing that audit in to a situation where eventually there will be an opinion on that as well in the financial statements of the entities concerned. At this point in time, we're at the point of phasing in where we've been indicating only in the management report what opinion we would have given had we gone to an opinion, so that the entities are aware of that, the audit committees are aware of that, and they can focus on that before the time comes to put it in the annual financial statements. What we are putting in the audit report in the financial statements is issues that we found regarding predetermined objectives where we felt that they have issues with the reliability of that information, with the with its compatibility to the predetermined objectives, where it's perhaps vague or where it can't be measured. So there again, and as you go through those three slides and perhaps compare them with one another, one will find also quite a lot of red ink as far as the predetermined objectives are concerned. So I think at a high level, that's perhaps the first message that we'd like to convey on the portfolio, and that is that, broadly speaking, it does need attention to the preparation of financial statements, and it needs attention with regard to the reporting on its predetermined objectives. As one goes through the detailed presentation, it packs out the reasons and the entities concerned. So as far as the financial statements are concerned, we may find many where we feel they ought to be preparing regular financial statements, doing more regular reconciliations, where we feel there should be a stronger hand by the CFO or the accounting officer. So that sort of information we'll pack out as we go forward. Should there perhaps be people here who are involved in other portfolios, these slides and this manner of presentation is pretty standard across our office. So it's just aggregated up to different levels. And scope for this morning, I think, is having a very similar presentation, but simply aggregated up to the results of all of our national audits in total. So these are available mostly for the different at portfolio level and at national level. What you will find differs in this presentation to the others is that going to the leadership slide there once again, and going to the right-hand side. It has one column added which the others don't have, and that's the column headed Leadership, Monitoring and Nurturing of Public Entities. We find that only in the leadership slide, and we've only marked that column as far as the National Department is concerned. And the reason we put that column in and the reason why we've marked that column is because it appears to us that stronger nurturing and planning and coordination and monitoring by the department could perhaps contribute overall to better results in the transport folio as a whole. So that's perhaps the one exception that we do have in these slides. I think by way of introduction, that sets the scene as to where we are, and perhaps it's a good opportunity now for Vinay just to go through the presentation and the notes at a high level, and then we can just layer down into the more detailed layers as we go ahead.
Thank you, Graham. Good morning, Honorable Chairperson and members of the Finance Committee. Thank you for the opportunity to present the audit outcomes of the Department of Transport and its entities for the 2009 tenure. The presentation will cover the public entities that Graham mentioned earlier and also the entities that is not audited by the Auditor General. That's what we call Section 4.3 entities. And typically under transport, you've got the airports company and the air traffic or the air traffic navigation services. The second slide talks to the reputation promise, just to share with the committee, the reputation promise of the Auditor General of South Africa. In essence, it talks to our constitutional mandate and being the only institution in South Africa tasked with the auditing of the public sector. So that's why we refer to ourselves as the Supreme Audit Institution. And basically sets out our existence in basically to strengthen the constitutional democracy, enabling oversight, accountability, and governance in the public sector through the auditing process, and at the end of the day, building public confidence. If we move on to slide 3, this is an overall summary, and it covers, the annexure talks that Graham spoke about earlier, talks to this summary. And you'll note that for the department, the audit outcome for 2009-10 remained unchanged, being financially unqualified with findings on predetermined objectives and or compliance in laws and regulations. You'll note the regression with regards to the Road Traffic Management Corporation, which moved from financially unqualified with findings to an adverse audit opinion. The qualified audit opinion is the cross-border road traffic, the cross-border road transport agency. And at the bottom there, we also highlight findings that which relates to our other reporting responsibilities, namely the reporting on predetermined objectives and also compliance with laws and regulations. So we highlight where there were findings under the public entities and also the department on those two issues as well. And just to note that AutoPax is reported for the first time in 2009-10, and the Urban Transport Fund is not reported in 2009-10 because it ceased to exist effective 31 March 2009. If we move into slide 4, this again talks to three fundamentals of internal control and the annexure that Graham covered earlier, namely the three fundamentals being leadership, financial and performance management, and also governance. Under leadership, the focus is on adequacy of skilled resources and also whether there's action taken to mitigate against risk and to address prior year audit findings. Under transport, we've also got the leadership monitoring and nurturing of public entities. In essence, what we're covering there, as Graham mentioned earlier, is the department, or what can the department do to try and assist those agencies or entities that are maybe struggling in the transport portfolio. So you'll see this evaluation in terms of the numbers talks to that slide that was presented earlier. And also the other issue that we cover is the information systems audit and whether there were findings on that. You'll note that the information systems audit was only done on 5 public entities, and the transport one was still in progress at the time of this presentation. Okay. Some of the challenges with regards to leadership is the issues of compliance with laws and regulations, the reporting on predetermined objectives, the issues of procurement and contract management. And what we say is that in order to ensure that clean administrations are maintained, there should be a concerted effort, and it should be sustainable, not having a regression over a period of time. In the detailed notes to the slides, which is the document that I will be talking to as well, we list the entities in detail, but it's also on the annex as well. If we move to slide 5, which talks to the financial and performance management, the key focus under financial and performance management is on, are there appropriate systems to generate the financial information and also the reporting on predetermined objectives? Has there been reviews of the financial statements prior to being submitted for audit? Is the issue of record keeping and document management, and also the IT issues around data integrity? So we highlight auditees that have maintained the good practices and auditees where there's improvement that is required. And again, the details as to the entities that require the improvement and those that have maintained the good practice is included in the notes to the slide on pages 8 onwards. So you'll find that in there. On the notes to the slide. We move on to the third area, or the third fundamental of internal control, and that's the issue of governance. Our focus on governance is risk assessments and the fraud prevention strategies and fraud prevention plans, the focus on effective internal audits, and the focus on effective and functioning audit committees, and also the issue of the IT governance framework. Again, we list the entities where there has been improvement or maintenance of good practices and entities and departments where there is improvements that are required. Again, the details of the actual entities that make up those numbers is included on pages 12, 13, 14 on the notes to the slides document. And also it would be on the annexure that Graham spoke about earlier. If we move to the next slide, which is slide number 7, and this talks to the financial statement qualification areas. The two entities that received sort of negative audit outcomes in the transport portfolio was the Cross Border Road Transport Agency and the Road Traffic Management Corporation. And what we're highlighting here is the areas that gave rise to those adverse or negative audit outcomes. Specifically under the Cross Border Road Transport Agency, you had the issue of the completeness of the penalty income, which affected the revenue line item on the financial statements, and also the completeness and existence of the accounts receivable. With regards to the Road Traffic Management Corporation, it was just the issue of the Road Traffic Infringement Agency that should have been established but was not established or was separately listed, which resulted in those transactions being included in the records of the Road Traffic Management Corporation. So not a fair statement of the activities of the Road Traffic Management Corporation, which gave rise to the adverse audit opinion. If we move to slide 8, here we start talking about the transversal material misstatements that were corrected. Graham alluded to this fact earlier when he highlighted those entities, but what we do here in detail is to highlight the financial statement categories under which material misstatements were corrected, and then also we sort of give the entities that were impacted or that had to make those material corrections to their financial statements under the respective financial statement categories. So typically we've got capital assets, your current assets, liabilities, and then we move on to revenue, expenditure, and other disclosures. That's on slide number 9. And on the right-hand side, you'll just find the entities that were impacted by that. Slide 10 covers fruitless and wasteful expenditure. And what we do on this slide is to highlight the instances of fruitless and wasteful expenditure, the entity involved, the reason for the fruitless and wasteful expenditure, and the amount involved for 2009-10. So typically you've got the Road Traffic Management Corporation, and there the issue was that employees were paid after the resignation. There was interest and also the issue of a discontinued system to the tune of $17 million. Then we've got the Ports Regulator, the Cross-Border Road Transport Agency, the Road Accident Fund. This is one of the biggest instances of fruitless and wasteful expenditure and relates to the sheriff and interest costs that were incurred on the delay in the payment of claims expenditure. Just to note that the Road Traffic Management Corporation and the Road Accident Fund account for 37% and 49% of the total fruitless and wasteful expenditure incurred in this portfolio. And there was also instances at PRASA as well. So the total fruitless and wasteful expenditure for the department together with its public entities was 46 million rands. If we move on to the next slide, which talks to irregular expenditure. And briefly, irregular expenditure covers the bulk of the irregular expenditure is in the Road Traffic Management Corporation and the South African Marine Safety Authority. And we give the reasons for the irregular expenditure. Under the SAMHSA, it was basically the expenditure that was incurred prior to the budget being approved, which resulted in the irregular expenditure being incurred. And then the Road Traffic Management Corporation, and the two issues there was the tender process not being followed, and then the transaction fee that was owed on the NATIS system to the Department of Transport, which was not paid over. Then the next slide talks to the unauthorized expenditure. The unauthorized expenditure was at the National Department of Transport, and it was overspending on the public transport program due to the bus subsidies. That's an issue that came through from the prior year, and the payment was made in April of the 2009. So that's why it's included in the current year financial statements. And that's basically what has happened since is that this has been the bus subsidies has been converted from the old system of using the number of tickets to a fixed kilometer base. So should avoid this unauthorized expenditure going forward, and also inclusion in the DORA. The next slide, slide 16, talks to our report and predetermined objectives. As Graham mentioned, it is a phased-in approach, and the audit opinion was for the opinion was not included in the audit report. But what we're highlighting here is, had we put the opinion in the audit report, this is where it would have fitted into in respect of the transport department and also the public entities. You'd note that the department was unqualified, and then you had entities that would have had a disclaimer of audit opinion, an adverse audit opinion, or qualified audit opinion, had we expressed an opinion on the predetermined objectives. So that opinion you wouldn't find in the audit report. And in the notes to the slide on page 18, we highlight which entities would have been given a disclaimer, which entities would have been given adverse, and which entities would have been qualified on predetermined objectives only. Slide 17 talks to the specific findings. Now, these are findings that you would find in the audit report. And just to note that AutoPax does not report on predetermined objectives, as that is included in the PRASA annual report. Talks to the findings, and we've got the categories of the findings, basically non-compliance with regulatory requirements, usefulness of the reported information, reliability of the reported information, and there were no instances of information that was not submitted by the 31 May 2010. But on the non-compliance, there was 40% of your public entities as compared to 63% in the prior year. With regards to usefulness of information, that was 50% in 2009-10 versus 27% in the prior year, and reliability 30% in 2009-10 versus 18% in the prior year. The reason for the 100% under the non-compliance under the department is only one department is included in this analysis, the National Department of Transport, and they had an issue on non-compliance, and it was typically on the quarterly reporting. But the details as to which entities fall into which category is included on pages 18, 19, and 20, and also 21. Some actions that we suggest that could be taken is that this should be included as part of the risk assessment of an entity or department, and also that more involvement of internal audit or audit committees in reviewing this information would maybe assist in making sure that these findings are addressed. This findings and compliance with laws and regulations was covered under slide 3. But here we just focus on the sort of top categories, and this relates to an additional reporting responsibility that we have as the Auditor General of South Africa. Under the department, there was no issues of non-compliance identified during our audit, but on the public entities, there were issues, and we highlight the sort of some of the issues. Typically, the SEM stands for Supply Chain Management findings that gave rise to irregular expenditure, and there were two entities that fell into that category. Again, the details of which entities are involved in the respective categories are included on pages 22 and 23 of the notes to the slide. Then we cover general and fiduciary and reporting responsibilities in terms of the PFMA, the internal audit, the functioning of the internal audit, the effectiveness of the internal audit, and also the audit committees, and strategic and corporate plans. So non-compliance identified under those areas. The next slide covers the findings on procurement and contract management. This is a specific focus area that we adopted for the 2009-10 audit, where we looked at procurement and contract management and gave it specific focus. So that means we applied the same audit approach to all public entities and all departments when we audited this area. And the top five findings that we had on this area were issues, and typically only on your public entities, the issues of free price quotations, fraud prevention plan, 500,000 Rand and above procurement without competitive bidding, prospective suppliers, and where the policies and procedures were not in place. Again, the details of which entities fall into those categories is included in the notes to the slide from page 23 on to page 24. Then the next slide covers the audits or the public entities that fall under transport but is not conducted by the Auditor General of South Africa, and these are typically your Air Traffic and Navigation Services and your Airports Company of South Africa. We give an indication of the audit outcome for the 2009-10 year of those entities. You'll note that both of them were financially unqualified with no findings on predetermined objectives or compliance with laws and regulations. And then we also, on those two entities, we give an indication of what the audit outcome would have been had we included this in the audit report on the predetermined objectives, and both those entities would have been unqualified on predetermined objectives. Chairperson, that's the end of the presentation. I've spoken to both the presentation and the notes as well. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you very much. I will now open for members to ask questions and seek clarification.
Just a question about the exclusion of the Auditor General, other than an overview role as I see it in terms of ACSA and CAA. What would cause them to become part of an audit where government or public funding is used? I mean, for instance, if there was a bailout of some sort like that, which I think CAA is calling for and I think ACSA is calling for in terms of its performance against its balance sheet, it's got shareholders, obviously, of which government is a 51% shareholder. Now, my question is this, that they have their own audits doing their own work. And just in you know, talking before we started, I was trying to get something in my mind as to why they don't fall under your jurisdiction, per se, as opposed to having their own private auditors. If you could just try and explain that. And then what the whether the mandate's given to those private auditors in terms of the fact that they are self-generating, I assume, that they account separately for public funds other than those coming in from, you know, I'm talking about grant funding as opposed to money generated through the operations.
Now, we will take a few questions before you respond. Honorable Defretos.
Thanks, Chair. From your report, the concerns are the cross-border road transport agency and the RTMC. How have you ensured, or how is there a mechanism that you ensure that this that they improve next year? Do you, I mean, are you actual? Do you get involved there? Do you assist them in making sure that they come out better next year or next time round? And then secondly, the in your slides, your annexures rather, annexure 2A, for example, lists a whole lot of concerns of, and so forth. Is there a mechanism to alert these concerns to the various entities? And do they get assisted as well in making sure these different aspects are improved upon? And thirdly, if there is an instance where you find gross irregularities, possible even suspicious corruption or something, how do you then handle that kind of instance? Thank you.
Yes?
Yes.
Honorable Dagood. Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to know if you compare the past audits and this one, 2008-2009 audits and the 2009-10 audits, is there any improvement from those entities which are which currently have this qualified audit. And in your opinion, do you think what you have suggested in this audit will maybe, if there is this proper monitoring and all that, will this help the entities to have unqualified audits next time? Thank you, Chair.
Well, we always interact with the department and entities, you know, when right at the end. Do you think that it would be helpful for us as a committee to have more regular, let me say on a quarterly basis, you know, interact with department and entities to just to make sure that, you know, they do meet their predetermined objectives, or, you know, that they are on track. Because, you know, it doesn't help a lot really when we come in at the year end, you know, like when the report is already printed, and then we want to come and raise questions. What would you suggest or think would be the best way for us as a committee also to, you know, in order to assist departments and entities to make sure that, you know, they do their work?
Thank you, Madam Chair. On page 14, irregular expenditure, and I refer specifically to the Road Traffic Management Corporation. My understanding at the time of the migrating of the NATIS into the eNATIS, there was 111 million rand over expenditure, of which the then National Treasury put into place a repayment scheme through this transaction fee. Now, my concern is, and I'm sure the concern of every motorist out there who I endlessly get requests and asking about, how does one now account for the fact that that money might have been repaid? And yet we continue year after year, in fact, to inflate. I think it started off at 30 rand, if I'm correct, Madam Chair, when we started the introduction of that transaction fee, which was specifically had to go back to National Treasury. I think this is the result of this, what you call irregular expenditure, because that money has been collected by RTMC and it's been used for its own purposes instead of going to Treasury, as in accordance with the Memorandum of Understanding. But I just wanted to find out, because I really feel that, you know, one needs to keep account of that. If the figure isn't 100 and a million, I don't know, but that's the figure that's in my mind, that we had to pay back as a result of this over-expenditure on the eNATIS system. Now, surely that money's paid back. I mean, if you take the number of motorists in this country paying 30 rand every time they license a car, now it's gone up to 36 rand. I mean, it sounds like a milking cow to me, which needs to be checked. And I wonder whether the AG can give some response to me as to exactly who is controlling that, and whether, in fact, that money now has been paid back, and whether the transaction fee is going to stop.
Honourable Bell.
Thanks, Chair. In which of the three areas do you find to be of commonality to the majority of entities in terms of weaknesses or errors?
I will now give an opportunity to the Office of the Auditor General to respond.
Thank you, Chair. I'll address as much as I can, and then I'll hand over, if I may, to Vinay to add any additional comments that he wishes to add on any of them. And then if between us you feel that you need to probe further, or there's something we haven't covered, then we'd certainly ask for your help to just to jog us and remind us there. The first question related to the split, if you will, between entities audited by the private sector and entities audited by the office. I think the first thing to be said is that in terms of the Public Audit Act, the Auditor General has the option of carrying out all audits of all government departments and all public entities. The public entities themselves are also defined as to what is a public entity. They're listed in their schedules in the PFMA, and those that comply with the requirements of the Act are in fact charged and have to register themselves as public entities with National Treasury. I say this because I think this is the first area where one needs perhaps to just consider this and keep some oversight. We keep discovering public entities from time to time. The Treasury has been working on this listing for quite a number of years. We also audit the consolidated accounts of government, and I don't think there is certainty at this point in time that the listing of public entities is absolutely complete. It certainly does move year on year. Having said that, over a number of years, or a number of entities have not been audited by the Auditor General. They've appointed their own auditors. It's been a historical thing. And they were brought into the fold with the Public Audit Act, where we then got the option to audit them or not to audit them. In those particular cases where the Auditor General has not exercised that option, the appointment or reappointment of the auditors does come to us for review, and we do exercise a control over the appointment and reappointment of the auditors. We've also imposed the public sector audit reporting format, which we use onto all of those entities. So their audit reports from this year, this past year, the 2009-10 year, are all in terms of that format, although the specific audit methodology, there's still latitude there for the firms who use their own methodology. Those audits we refer to as the Section 4.3 audits, and the Auditor General also issues a directive annually, and that directive, it is gazetted, and that sets out the specific requirements which have to be applied in the audits of those entities. So, yes, there is alignment, there is increasing alignment, and I think it remains to be seen as we go into the future to what extent the Auditor General takes those audits back. The audits that we carry out as an office, we contract out somewhere around the 20% mark, depending on the business unit concerned. And we contract out for various reasons. Some of the reasons are to promote and maintain expertise in the private sector, to interact with the private sector, and to make sure that we're aligned ourselves. And when those audits are contracted out, they're contracted out specifically under the auspices of our office. So each of those audits will have an audit controller. The audit controller will attend to key functions. The audit controller will go to audit steering committee meetings, to audit committee meetings from time to time, review the outcome of the audit, review the audit report, and we as an office in fact actually sign off those audit reports. So they're extremely closely controlled. With regard to this portfolio, the two audits which are Section 4.3 audits, where we've opted not to perform them, are AXA, the Airports Company, and the Air Transport Navigation Service. Civil Aviation is an audit that is done in-house under our own auspices. moving then on to the whole question of how to constructively engage and how to improve, whether there are instances like the CVRTA and the RTMC, as well, also importantly in our view, to maintain good audit outcomes where those where there have been good audit outcomes. I think it's important to say first of all that there's a fine line between assisting and motivating and advising and then perhaps losing one's independence as an external auditor. So we are careful to guard our independence. We're careful not to make ourselves part of decision making, not to make ourselves part of policies or to prescribe issues. So we certainly don't want to find ourselves in a situation where the entity can say to us, you instructed us to do the following, and now you're auditing us against that, and thus losing objectivity. We are engaging with the entities. We're engaging at every level. Our staff on the audits are familiar with these key controls. We hold quarterly meetings with the accounting officers and the accounting authorities. We meet the ministers concerned also regularly, quarterly, where that's possible. And the way we really can help, I think, is first of all by bringing these matters to the attention, which we do, and then looking at which key controls they can implement, which would then assist them to rectify these matters. So for every entity, we do have a list of key controls, and we do communicate those, and we do monitor their progress. We also monitor the progress of the implementation of audit findings, the effectiveness of their internal audits. So we do play quite an active role there. With regard to gross irregularities and perhaps even going on into fraud, it's not our specific mandate to identify fraud or to carry out special investigations. As an office, we do have a business unit which is devoted to special investigations, which can carry them out. I think it depends very much on the nature of the finding concerned and who one perceives to be involved as to how exactly to take that forward and who to communicate it to. So it's very much a case-driven approach, if I can put it that way. Comparing past audits to this one, I think that as a portfolio globally, there's perhaps been little change to the big picture. It's pretty much a repeat, I think, of the prior year. And we certainly need to look closely at the financial reporting, the quality of the financial statements, and the quality of reporting on predetermined objectives. On how to interact as a portfolio committee, I think one's looking clearly here at governance and how to take that forward, and I'd certainly hesitate to make too many suggestions as to how the portfolio committee should operate, but certainly at audit committee level, the progress against predetermined objectives does have to be reported on quarterly. We follow that up and see that is done and report on that if it's not done. And the audit committee should be certainly looking at the progress that's being made against the predetermined objectives, and I think even more importantly, up front, as to are these the objectives that we want? Do we agree with these objectives? Are they appropriate for the organization? And is this where we want to drive that particular entity? So I'd certainly suggest a very proactive approach in looking at their objectives and driving them actively, because clearly in the public sector, we're not really seeking perhaps financial goals. Many of the goals that we're chasing are non-financial. So it makes that part of the audit and the reporting especially important. On the RTMC, we have quite a number of findings on the RTMC. I don't have a clear answer for you on exactly what's happened to that money. I'd suggest, and normally I think we do suggest that one calls the entity and the accounting officer to account on their specific transactions. But certainly the RTMC does have a long way to go, and we can go into some more detail on that entity if need be. As far as the weaknesses in general are concerned, of all of the entities, I think I would simply need to go back there once again to their reporting on their finances and their reporting on their predetermined objectives. So those are certainly that's certainly the message I think coming out of this presentation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Are there any other honourable parties?
Follow up on something else which perturbs me, because it could be like, you know, a parallel process. In certain instances where there has been adverse financial management of entities, and I talk about the RTMC in particular, the minister sets up a forensic audit. Now, do you actually then tie up what's going on with that in terms of the outcomes there with the outcomes that you might have achieved in terms of your audit? Because it could be duplicating, A, and B, it could be also something that would assist you in trying to come to some predetermined outcome. I ask this in the knowledge that, you know, lots and lots and lots of money is spent on specific forensic audits for agencies or entities where they have run into trouble. And I'm just wondering now whether, I'll ask you frankly, have you seen the report of the task team that was appointed by the minister in respect of the RTMC, and what conclusion did come from there in terms of what your audit found, and was it corresponding, or is there something in addition that you need to add now to be able to close the holes where obviously clearly there's misappropriation and mismanagement of funds?
Thank you, Chair. As far as investigations are concerned, and also for that matter, the reports of internal auditors, we do review those reports. We do look at any impact that they may exert on the financial statements, on the predetermined objectives, and on our audits. We also report in our audit reports the fact that there's been an investigation. As far as the specific follow-up actions are concerned, I think those are largely in the hands of the respective governing bodies. The information I have on the investigation that we're referring to here is that the report was finalized subsequent to year-end and that the recommendations are being evaluated by the RTMC for the necessary corrective actions. And that we will review that during the audit of the current year, but that we've not in fact review that at this point in time. We'll do that as we go through the audit of the current year.
Thank you, Chairperson. My question has not been answered. In your presentation, you said there are three key areas that I consider to be critical in order for you, or that you actually use as your tool of analysis, being leadership, finance, and performance management and governance. And my question was, from these three areas, which of these three areas do you actually find to be of commonality to the majority of entities that most of them would normally be found to be wanting on? And what could be the problem according to you? Thank you.
Chairperson, if we look at that analysis, the sort of common area looks like it is leadership, and the sort of sub area under leadership we're looking at is the skilled resources with regards financial and performance management. So that would be the area of concern or the common area.
My question is also related to the question that has been asked by Honorable Bell. And also it relates to the question that was asked by Honorable Lagode of the comparisons between the 2008-2009 audit report and 2009-2010 audit report. When you compare the common areas that are related to financial management as a result of skilled personnel resources, would you say that there is improvement or there is no improvement?
Chair, I think I think the high level answer is that it's very much the same, that as a portfolio, I think there's not a lot of improvement. What one is finding is that the strong entities, if you will, have certain characteristics and they seem to remain strong, and the weaker entities, I think, grapple with their issues. There's certainly been improvement in some. I think one needs to look at them perhaps more specifically. I think SAMHSA is one that has shown some improvement. I think as a general point, I know we've been harping perhaps on the predetermined objectives. So on the one hand, it does need a lot of attention. On the other hand, it is new, and it is a new concept in government. So I think it's also to some degree reasonable to expect that there would be a learning curve in going forward with that. As far as the financial statements are concerned, it is normal, I think, wherever one goes in auditing, that one does pick up corrections here and there to financial statements. It's part of the game of auditing, and it's part of what we do. It's taken forward in the management representations. the message here is that the extent of those corrections is far beyond what one would normally expect, and that they really need to focus on regular reconciliations, the regular preparation of financial statements, regular review throughout the year, so that when one does get to year end, it's not an issue of the year end.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just trying to analyse, you know, the outcomes on your three annexures. And if you take the governance one, which I understand to be really relating to the board and its directors and the direction it gives it in terms of the King report, the entities that come out there on slide 2C seem to reflect a totally different picture to what we appear to be the problem child, you know, of RTMC, CBRT, and that. It seems that the issues now, as I read this, if you look at the, let's call them the scorecard here of reds, in terms of either an improvement, as I understand it, of governance or not, the RAF and SANRAL come popping out of the woodwork here. And am I right in then understanding that this is measured on some processes that might have taken place which were not governed by the board as a result of this particular heading, or am I reading this indifferently? I notice your one has got a green and a red. Mine's all red. Is that a problem then? So there it is. So it's not then. It's not reflecting what I would have determined as a result of the additional, you know, boxes that I could tick against a particular agency or not, in terms of whether it's improving, because all mine, and I think every member's here, shows this as a red on both sides. But I see, just looking across at yours, it's a green and a red.
Can we put this on the screen?
Yeah, I think you should, because it reflects a picture now of the Road Accident Fund and SANRAL coming out as being a serious offender in terms of governance. And I thought they had reasonably good, solid boards. Same as that's wrong. So can we read the first sector, Madam Chair? Sorry, I'm just working through you. To treat it as green, right? And the other section is red.
Madam Chair, that's actually, if you like, I'll just hold
up
mine for those
that
can
hear. Okay, that's a different picture.
The left-hand side is green and the right hand side is green.
My analysis is totally wrong. Well, I'll remove my question. It's the same people, the same agencies. Okay, thank you, sir.
Sorry, yes, I was also confused. Could I ask that this graph be corrected and perhaps be sent to our secretary, who could then send it to us? I'd love to have it electronically, but obviously the right information. Thank you.
Thank you. I am on Annexa 2A. There is a column that talks to leadership monitoring and nurturing of public entities. I want to speak to that column. In our interaction with all the entities as a portfolio committee, we were of the view that the RTMC had not been nurtured by the department to actually assume its responsibilities. The fact that the department had to extend the contract because the management of the Inatis, the management system of Inatis had not been established at the RTMC. In our view, when we interacted with the department last week, was as a result of a failure by the department, particularly that branch, to ensure that whilst the contractor is implementing the program, on one hand, ground is being prepared at the RTMC for the RTMC to assume responsibility of running with the Inatis, and we were in agreement. Our analysis, when we posed that question to the department agreed that our analysis was correct. The question that I am posing is, if at portfolio committee level we have found that as a reason for the extension of the contract, why is then on this particular column there is no red reflecting that the department did not play its role as well as the board of the RTMC to ensure that that was actually in place?
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I'm afraid this column, I think, is a very confusing one in this respect, that we've only marked it for the department itself, and we haven't in fact marked it for the entities, because our interpretation was that had we marked it for an entity, it would mean that entity should have been carrying out some sort of leadership monitoring and nurturing. So I think our intention certainly...
I'm referring to the branch within the department, because an entity is the baby of the department. Therefore, the department has a responsibility of nurturing the entity until it gets off the ground. And the department has extended the contract of the contractor based on the fact that RTMC is not ready to assume that responsibility. And in our opinion, as a portfolio committee, that is what we said last week. The department is responsible for nurturing the entities and ensure that they are ready to assume their responsibilities. That is the role of the department. But on the other hand, the board within the entity is also responsible for ensuring that that entity is ready also. So there are two players in terms of making sure that the entity is able to perform its duty. It is the governance, the aspect of the entity, as well as the department under the branch that looks after the entities. That activity would not have happened on its own to prepare the RTMC to be ready to assume that responsibility, which is currently performed by the contractor, so that Inatis will then be transferred in totality to the state under RTMC. That is what we are saying. Up to now, RTMC has not assumed that responsibility. What has happened, because this nurturing role has not been effected, what has then happened is that a crisis management intervention has been put in place, and that crisis management intervention is to extend the contract. The question is, why don't we see the red next to the RTMC on the column of leadership monitoring and nurturing of public entities, which is the responsibility of the department? Because if we see this as a lack of performance, and the Auditor General's office doesn't see that as a lack of performance, then we are giving contradictory statements to the department.
Honourable Chair, we agree with your statements, and our understanding is that that's reflected in the red block against the department by saying that the department has failed in its leadership monitoring and nurturing of public entities. Broadly speaking, in general, yes, and we haven't packed that out into monitoring of each individual one.
But it would have been much clearer to us if the department has failed to do that, and it is reflected under all the entities where the department has failed to perform those duties. Because the department has not failed to nurture itself. If this column refers to the department, we should be seeing this next to all the entities where the department has failed to nurture them. As it stands, as this stands now, it would only mean that the department has failed to nurture itself, because that red is next to the department. It is not next to the entity. And if it stands like this, if you are saying that it reflects a department that has failed to nurture, but it doesn't tell us which entities the department has failed to nurture, because some of them have been nurtured to a level where they are running on their own.
I tend to agree with what the chairperson said, and it reflects in terms of a particular program that the department has, which calls itself the Branch of Public Entity Oversight, etc., which is that department that should be ensuring that the mandate that is accordingly given to those agencies in accordance with the Act are complied with. But even more importantly, in this particular case in question, and the DG is on record too, and in response to me in a debate on this issue, is that the eNATIS contract, which was awarded many, many years ago when it was still NATIS and now eNATIS and such like, had a component in the contract which involved certain transferring of skills into capacitating our department to ensure that at some stage or other the contract could release itself of its incumbent duties, and that the department would run this thing in conjunction with its agency, in this case RTMC, to its own account. Because needless to say, the contract has been extended, as you know, and I'm sure that's picked up in your audit
legally or illegally. It still needs to be, you know, found out. But the problem lies is that we still sit with an agency who's mandated to do that job and to implement in terms of another act called OARTA, which is the demerit system, as you're aware, a process which would allow that to be implemented, and it's already 4 years ago that thing was actually enacted by this parliament. So you see, the failure in terms of that, linked to the fact that we have a contract that is just awarded year after year after year, and there's no mentoring taking place to allow someone to ultimately hold at ransom the whole departmental issue. So this is fruitless and wasteless expenditure, as I see it, and I think that you need to just focus on that. We tell you about it because we think it needs to have action. I mean, you can't just carry on, you know, for year after year after year with that issue deriving. And my question would be then, does one, when you look into, I know it's not a very closely audited process that you're going to, you tend to have to do that and scan it on some sort of information. But contracts and tenders, which, you know, reflect a certain process that should take place that don't take place, are really a problem here, and this is where the issue starts.
I want to simplify what is the issue of concern here. Our understanding is that for any project that is being implemented, you'd have a project team. The project team would be made of the contractor service provider, and the people that are representing the client. There would also be milestones in the contract. And if the transfer of inertis to RTMC was one of the milestones, each and every milestone has got a person responsible for that milestone to happen and the time at which that milestone has to happen. That is what one would get from a Microsoft project management system. Even on the Gantt chart management system, you would get that. When you are managing a project, you would know exactly which milestones have to happen and when, and who is responsible for that. Because your payment to the contractor is based on those milestones. If there are no milestones and there is no project team and there is no project manager within the department, the milestones, deadlines will be missed. And from the contractor's side, that is good news because it means that the contract will be extended. So the contractor does not have an interest of meeting the milestone at the specified deadline, because that results with the contractor's contract extended. More especially if the milestone has to do with transfer of skills and transfer of the services to build the capacity of the client to actually take over the work that was done by the service provider. So it is in the interest of the service provider to have the contract extended. It should not be in the interest of the client to have the contract extended. Therefore, it would be from the representatives of the client within the project management team to ensure that that milestone is actually achieved so as to reduce the cost of paying the contractor. Now, the problem that we have is that we have an entity that is using money, collecting money and using it. It's not getting transferred to the department. We also have, on the other hand, the contractor that is getting its contract renewed because there is no system in place that pushes to a level where the role of the contractor is phased out and the responsibility of running Inatis is transferred fully to the state. That is our concern. Because to us, that is, you are spending money twice as a department. You are spending money funding the entity, and the entity is utilizing whatever the funds are being collected without building the capacity of the entity to assume the responsibility of the work that was done by the contractor and then terminate the contract of the contract, terminate the contract with the service provider. And we want the Office of the Auditor General to say to us the conclusion and the observations that we are making are actually not correct. We are not correct when we are saying that as a portfolio committee. And if the Office of the Auditor General says we are correct, we are asking the Office of the Auditor General as to why are they not finding that as something wrong that is being done and an action which will arm us to say a particular action has to be taken against the responsible person who has caused that.
Madam Chair, thank you. I think as I've said, we certainly don't take issue with the committee. That's your sentiments. There's from our side, no misunderstanding there. The column, I think, is obviously confusing because it certainly wasn't the intention of this column to give the department a clean bill of health as far as RTMC's nurturing is concerned. It was certainly our intention that the red block covered that, but I can only agree that it's confusing, and perhaps we need to relook the column and the wording and so on of the column. As far as monitoring performance is concerned, we don't see it, I think, as part of our mandate. Our mandate is to report on the to provide an opinion on the fairness of the financial statements, the performance information, and the compliance, and through doing that, to provide those charged with governance with the confidence that the information that they have is information they can use to take action on. So I think we would be looking to governance to take the necessary action where there's been a failure to perform by any entity, rather than taking that action ourselves or endeavoring to measure its performance ourselves.
Can I just clarify myself? We are not asking you to take any action, but we are asking you to give an opinion that says it is a wasteful expenditure, and also to have a column here that indicates that it is the department that has failed to nurture that entity. Because if you have this column and then you don't have it next to RTMC, what that tells us is that the department is school clean in this issue. So we don't have to look for
anything wrong that has been done by the department in relation to the extension of the inactive of the contract, and also the fact that a RTMC at this level is not carrying its mandate fully.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. We'll relook the column. It is confusing.
Maybe to improve on this column, because I think that it is a very important column. Maybe we would need to use different colors for this column, and also put those colors next to the entities where the department has nurtured the entity to its maturity stage. Maybe we put a green. I'm just suggesting. And where the department has nurtured, but not to an extent where the entity has matured, we put a different color. And we put a red where the department has dismally failed to provide that nurturing support. Because in our view, and we have said this to the department, not only last week, even last year when we engaged with the department and all the entities, in our view, the department has failed to nurture this entity, has failed to play its role of nurturing this entity for it to perform to its fullest capacity. That is why we have even taken a decision of calling the minister to come and brief us on this entity, so that we can also know whether the way forward is to keep this entity or what. And if this entity is to be kept, what support is going to be given by the department, and what are the shareholders saying about this entity, the future of this entity. That is how serious we view the RTMC, because there is a lot of money that is going into it, but there is very little value that is derived from the RTMC. Then, I don't know whether you would want to comment on that, to say, let us put different colors to indicate the role that has been played by this branch of the department, to indicate an entity that has been nurtured to its maturity, and an entity that is in the ICU, and an entity that is in the mortuary.
A generic sort of question, because it worries me as to the extent, and it's been very enlightening here, I might add, Madam Chair, with having the AG for the first time I've ever experienced them in a portfolio committee, explaining to them their roles and how they analyse. But if you look at the department's budget in sorry? No, it's good. It really is good, this interaction, because it gives you a better understanding. But the thing that have always worried me, for instance, is that in your departmental budget, if you take the two main items, the one is bus subsidies, and the other one, on a phased-out basis, is the payments going into Gautrain. Now, those are two things that we see the transfers out. And as long as, you know, in some cases there's a direct payment going in, but now what does the Auditor General do in checking to see that the bus subsidy payments are, you know, in accordance with those contracts, which were very, you know, on the ticket basis versus the kilometre? Now, I'm glad to see there's that change. And that the actual money that go to Gautrain, which is big money, is actually, you know, in terms of a certificate of payment or, you know, progress, I don't know. You know, I worry that we've got two very big items in the budget we have no handle on. We don't know what happens to it. We just see it as transfers out. Now, who's picking up down there along the line, you know, whether those bus subsidies have been just going into someone's pocket or Gautrain, you know, CEOs getting fatter and fatter, you know, I don't know. It just worries me. And I'd like to just sort of get an indication as to how you handle that. Is it just that you're happy that the money's gone out, or do you actually then try and verify it in terms of, you know, some progress payment?
Thank you, Chair.
I'll talk to the to your question, if I may, and the mayor, I'm sure, will comment on the second question. Yes, thank you. I think that these tables are a developing exercise. I think, as we mentioned in the introduction, that this particular column is a new column that we've introduced specifically for this committee and is in fact different to all the other presentations. So I think that the comments are certainly worthwhile. The extent to which we could colour it now based on the past audit, I think we would need to look at, because normally we discount any information that we're going to need and any views that we're going to have into our planning for the audit. We discount that into the audit procedures up front. So where you've seen here comments on supply chain management, for example, those audit procedures were designed long before the start of this year. They were discounted into our audit methodology. It was carried out by all of our auditors in the field, and that then generated the findings, which were reviewed and eventually find their way back into this final product. So it may not be easy to identify them according to specific colours for the past year, but I think we certainly hear you, and it's something we can look at discounting into our methodology if one needs to for the audit of the current year.
The issue of the transfers and subsidies, the bus subsidies are picked up by our auditors of the provincial department, so they would check that right through to municipalities, because we audit the municipalities as well. On the Gautrain and other transfers and subsidies, what we do look at is, besides the actual payment being made, if there's any conditions attached to that transfer, then we'd actually test compliance with those conditions at the national department.
My question is more on the yardstick that is used to measure the performance and expenditure of the department and the entities, which is leadership, financial management, and governance. I think those are good tools of measurement, but only if the focus is on if we approach issues from the perspective, from only the perspective of whether finances are used in the manner in which they are supposed to be used, and we end there. I think that we can take those as tools of measurement, a yardstick. But if our goal as a country is to improve the living standards of the public of this country, I don't think that we are using adequate tools. I don't know whether it is possible at a level of the Office of the Auditor General to effect a measurement tool that would enable us to see whether we are getting value for the money that we spend in terms, in line with the goals of the country. The goals are to improve the living standards of the people of this country. And we use the money to effect the programs that are aimed at improving the living standards of the people of this country. My understanding is that that is what we do, we are doing. And for me, I would have another tool that would actually tell me whether I am getting value for the money that I'm deploying. The question then that I'm asking, first of all, let me make an example of what I mean by that. Prior the new government, the economy of this country was not going, was not growing. But also, this country had features of a first world and a third world in one country. And the new government committed itself to actually reduce the features of the third world and narrow the gap between the rich people of the country and the poor people of the country. But not only in the, in term, I'm talking just the economic aspect of it. And the government then effected policies that were going to ensure that there is growth in the economy, because when the new government came into power, the economy was not growing. Those policies also had to ensure that the social standards and the economic standards of the people that are living in the third world part of the country are actually improved. When we look at what has happened as a result of what we have done, we see a growing economy as well as a growing poverty. Okay, I'm just talking at the level of the economy. Let us now bring that to the social conditions of the country, to say we are spending money with the aim of improving the social conditions. The tools of measurement that we are using are only telling us whether we have good people in leadership, we are providing leadership. The tools that we are using are enabling us to see whether we have good financial management systems and resource people in the positions of financial management. And the tools that we are using are giving us a picture of whether we are we have good governance systems. There is no tool that is telling us whether we are improving the social conditions. Whose responsibility it is to measure that? Whether we are getting value for the money that we are spending. Because in my opinion, that is the ultimate goal of what we are doing. We are using this money in order to improve the living conditions. And if we don't have a tool that enables us to measure that, we would always focus on the financial expenditure aspects without looking at the improvement of living conditions as a result of us having deployed all those financial resources.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Perhaps I can say a few words about auditing and our goals with the audit. And I think one of the things that needs to be said first is this question of auditing performance. Now, the audit of performance has two very distinct facets. One facet is what we're doing here, and that's the audit of performance information, and that's not our information, that's management's information that we're looking at to see whether that information is credible. So that's the audit of performance information, and that is very different from what we refer to as performance auditing. We do have a specific component in the office that is a performance auditing component. Now, when they audit performance, they again, in turn, don't audit the performance itself. Their audit focuses on the measures implemented by management to achieve economy, efficiency, and effectiveness. So they would say, what has management done to achieve the ultimate goals is what the effectiveness would talk to, would be to looking at the final outcome and looking at the measures management has put in place, in fact, to achieve that outcome. Those audits are done separately. They're done on an individual basis, and they're reported on separately. So that is a completely separate exercise. If we look at what we're doing here, this I think talks to our reputation promise as an office, which is really the same thing as the mission. And it's our view that effective governance cannot take place if accurate and credible information is not flowing through to the decision makers. So if we go back to our reputation promise, we believe that our role in strengthening constitutional democracy is through enabling oversight, accountability, and governance. It's in fact not to carry it out, but to enable it by auditing, and the service we render is to indicate the credibility and the reliability of the information which governance is using then to achieve its objectives. Now, I think it's clear to us that good governance cannot take place and one cannot achieve one's objectives if they're not measurable and if one doesn't have reliable and credible information to use to make decisions on, to assess the performance and so on and so forth. So I think once again we certainly certainly subscribe to your views. There's no doubt about that. And I think it's our message in this information that in order for those charged with governance and those charged with, in fact, achieving these goals and achieving the effective use of public money, we do need an improvement in the information. We do need the entities concerned to focus on better information and more reliable information, both financial and performance. And I think it's the performance information which is really the key driver in governance, because I think once again, as you mentioned, many of the goals are not financial goals, they're social goals, and we may be measuring in terms of employment, poverty, education, safety, and we really need measurable and clear goals by all entities related to those outcomes. We need very clear measures that they wish to implement, and certainly I think that's a picture that we cast some doubt on here in our findings on the performance information. As an office, we do have scheduled a performance audit, in fact, of the effectiveness of the rollout of this initiative of reporting on predetermined objectives in government. And that's a review that's scheduled by the performance auditing component, and I think scheduled to be carried out as we move forward into the current year. But thank you, Chair. I think we certainly subscribe to your goals and concerns, and we hope to help you achieve that through building confidence in the information that the entities convey to you.
Thanks. I think that we need to appreciate the work that is done by the Office of the Auditor General in as far as ensuring that the money that is given to the department and the entities is spent within the parameters of what it was given for. But I think that that is not enough for a developmental state. A developmental state should be more worried about the change being affected through that money. And therefore, the performance auditing component of the Auditor General, to me, is more important. It should actually be the one that comes first, because even on budgeting, you first outline what you want to do and also outline the material resources that you need to in order to be able to do what you want to do. You also outline the human resources that you require to do what you want to do. And right at the end, you cost how much will it be to buy these material resources and to buy the skills of the human resources in order for you to achieve what you want to achieve.
Therefore, the measurement of your performance, the measurement of whether you are doing well, should not only focus on the last column of what you wanted to do, because what we are doing here, we are actually measuring the financial implications of what we said we wanted to do. And in my view, we should not only be measuring the financial implications. We should also be measuring whether the financial implications, the financial interpretation of what we wanted to do, together with the programs, have actually had a positive impact on what we wanted to do. So we should be measuring progress and impact. And also, I would want to further understand the performance auditing component, whether it focuses to both the progress that is being made and the impact that is being made. I'm going to make an example. I served in a municipality that is a water service authority. Money was spent to build a dam. The dam was completed on time. The general manager got a performance bonus because the money allocated to build a dam was spent on time and the dam was completed. But no tap was opened to provide water to the people. So no change happened to the lives of the people as a result of that money being allocated to build a dam and the dam being built. Until one day, I, together with the general manager responsible for planning, infrastructure development and economic development, went and took the inspection on local to see whether that dam is providing water to the community, and we discovered that there was no water that was provided to the community. So that's what I mean. Thank you very much, and I think that we are making progress. I also think that this will help us very much. What you have given, the information that you have given us, will enable us to engage with the entities and raise the correct questions. Like where we see on slide 11, road accident fund, sheriff and interest costs as a result of the delays in payment of claims and expenditure. The question that we would ask to the RAF is what causes the delays? And if they give us a satisfactory answer, we would then be satisfied. But if they don't give us a satisfactory answer, we would ask more questions. So this exercise is enabling us to ask the relevant questions that are going to assist the entities to deal with the problems that are causing the findings, the performance that is then related to the findings of the Auditor General, because we would want all our entities and the department not only to get unqualified audit reports, but also to get unqualified reports that do not have any findings, because they shall have dealt with the causes, like interest on overdue supply accounts,
which means somebody is sitting on the invoices. And as a result, then we part with 3.7 million because the payments are not effected on time. And somebody has to respond to those things and answer those questions. We think that this engagement has been very, very helpful. It allows us to have a better understanding and also have a better way of holding the department and the entities accountable. We also want to further engage to look at what I have read before the presentation of the next financial report, the annual report, so that we can then find ways in which we can bring in the performance auditing component of the Auditor General to help us then measure, understand, get information that would enable us to see whether the programs that are being done are being implemented at the entities level as well as the department level are effecting any change that the government would want to see on the ground, or we are spending money in the programs that we feel good about, not the programs that are addressing the needs of the people on the ground. Because I think it is our responsibility as public representatives to actually make that distinction, whether we engage in programs that I feel good to do, or programs that are addressing the felt needs by the people. Because there are two types of needs. The perceived need by the person who's going to give me, and the felt need where the person who gives me has actually consulted me and understands that what he or she is giving to me is actually addressing my felt need. Thank you very much. I declare the meeting. Oh, before that, thank you very much. You can be released if you want to. We are done with the Office of the Auditor General. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, and thank you, members of the committee.
We are going to start with the program for the twenty-first and twenty-second. Somebody was rushing doing this. Day one is on the top and day two is under.
Thank you very much.